empty. Good afternoon and welcome. You are listening to The Computer Guys. I'm Dave.
And I'm Kevin, and we're The Computer Guys here from Macatawa Technologies for the next half hour to answer all your computer and technology-related questions.
The week before Christmas, Kev, probably some technology questions out there. Maybe people thinking about gifts of some sort of technology for Christmas, and we'd be happy to answer any of those questions that you might have. And it's always a more interesting show when you guys call in, and we're happy to take some of those calls here. Phone lines are open. We'll be taking those calls onto the air here, 395-1450.
The other way you can get a hold of us is to send us an email. It's computerguys@whtc.com. We'll be checking that throughout the show today as well as throughout the week. So, you know, Christmas is coming up. If you have questions throughout the week, you can always send us an email too, and we'll do our best to get to it on the show. Again, that's computerguys@whtc.com.
Well, Kev, it is the last show for Computer Guys. We'll probably have a couple of
weeks
off.
You mean before Christmas?
I mean, for Christmas, right. Last show here. So it'll be a couple of weeks before we're back in here live. Get your questions in.
What day is New Year's fall?
Well, it'll be New Year's Eve on the next one.
That's true. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so get your questions in now. Otherwise, you're just going to have to hold on to them.
Of course, as well as our normal calls or emails, you can always count on some news stories this afternoon as well. And if you miss out on any of these Computer Guys episodes or any of them, the past ones you want to check out, we have a free podcast that you can check out. The easiest way, of course, is if you've got the iTunes program installed on your computer, just go to the music store and search for WHTC, and you'll see us right on there.
Mm-hmm. You can download that and just listen to it anytime you want. So
one thing that you won't be able to see, though, Kev, speaking of iTunes, you won't see Steve Jobs giving this year's Macworld keynote.
Oh, no. What's going on there?
Well, I'll have to let you think about that for a second here while we... Oh, go ahead. Phone call is coming through. Hopefully, I didn't hang them up on them there. Probably wouldn't be the first time if I did. 395-1450. Well, Steve Jobs is not going to be at the Macworld Expo after this year. The other bad news for Apple fans is that Steve Jobs won't be delivering the keynote in 3 weeks. We may have seen his last one more thing. You know how he always...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Apple VP Phil Schiller will be doing the honors instead. He's an Apple executive who, according to the person who wrote this column anyway, is lacking in Jobs' showmanship and star power, according to the Fortune blogger who wrote about this. So Apple's press release states that trade shows have become a very minor part of how Apple reaches its customers.
Interesting.
While that may be true, the keynote addresses have been a critical venue for major new product announcements. Jobs has been doing the keynote at Macworld since 1997.
Yeah, and that's always been something that people have looked forward to because, you know, he's got a flair. So there's
he's a showman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So he can really get that product, which is a good product to
begin
with. I
think I know why he's not
going to
be there.
Why is that?
Couldn't find any more of those little black turtlenecks he always wears.
They're all out.
Maybe it went out of style, and they are out of his size, and he just thought, you know, maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
That's probably it. Oh, man.
Well, sort of like in the future, you know, how you see these futuristic movies, everybody always wears the same things in the future. Yep. Steve Jobs is from
the
future.
He was ready for the future.
He always wears the exact same thing, this little black turtleneck.
Yep.
Let's go ahead and...
Maybe that's what everybody at Apple wears.
You never know.
Company attire.
Go ahead and take this phone call here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the...
Funny joke, Dave. Funny joke.
Hey, what can I say? 395-1450 if you want to give us a call here.
This is also Apple-related. In stores, Pogo Stylus for iPhone and iTouch. Most people agree the idea of a touchscreen for an iPhone or music player is a great idea. And people also agree that not everyone has the same touch. That's why the Pogo Stylus for the Apple iPhone and iTouch is a great idea for those who need a gift idea for thinking of an accessory to somebody who has one of those. Stylus gets rid of the problems caused by those whose fingers aren't thin enough to make our choices clear when we tap away at the on-screen keyboard or icons on the iPhone or iTouch. Since it's thinner than a fingertip, it can be much more accurate at typing notes, phone numbers, or navigating through the screens. Also eliminates the problem of creating smudges on the glass surface of the device, which is, you know, a bit of a frustration for some people. Stylus can be tucked into a pocket, and it comes in four colors: black, silver, gunmetal, and cranberry. Check it out at 101design.com.
What's the cost on those? About 30 bucks?
It doesn't even have it. I would guess, you know, 20, 30 bucks, somewhere in there.
The I have seen those, little reviews of those online. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the iPhone or iPod Touch, as cool as it is tough to use. Have you used the keyboard on there?
No, I haven't tried to enter anything in. Yeah.
You know, it's for scrolling around and clicking on the applications and everything. Works great. Yep. Once you start getting in that little keyboard.
Yep. And assuming you're going to hold it like this, you're going to probably be using your thumbs. So if you're holding it sideways and trying to enter information with your thumbs, you know.
But I tell you what, when people get good at it, man, they cruise on that little
through
thing.
There.
You know? Well, just like when I'm with any device, phone or PDA or whatever it happens to be.
Learning curve.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely a learning curve.
So that's, and actually the nice thing about that little stylus is it attaches to the iPhone. The iPhone doesn't actually have like a little holder for one of those styluses or styli.
So what? How does it attach?
I don't know. Just
a clip or something?
Some type of a little clip or...
Magic?
I don't know.
Apple magic? Could be.
But those things are actually not as easy to lose as you might think. I've had a stylus with a phone since I've had a phone in 2002.
But the key with that is there's been a pocket.
Right.
Where you stick it in when you're done.
But even so, you would think that you would lose it more often.
Yeah.
That sort of goes along, Kev. I was reading an article the other day, talked about the predictions. You know, end of the year, there's always sort of these predictions on what's going to happen next year.
Sure.
Their prediction was by 2011, we'll be phasing out the keyboard.
Wow.
For desktop or desktop computer.
That's sooner than I would have expected.
I don't know that I necessarily agree with that one.
Oh, man.
You?
No, I don't think it's going to happen that fast. I mean, let alone...
New ones, I would assume.
Let alone, you know, the technology... You know, getting to where it needs to be is the resistance of the people saying, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with the way things are. So getting people to adapt is going to be a problem. And, you know, hey, if people don't adapt, they're not going to sell what they want to sell. And so they're going to keep selling keyboards. So it'll at least be available as an option, I'm sure, for quite some time.
Got an email here, computerguys@whtc.com. What is the least expensive way to add wireless to a laptop computer?
Well... Probably popping the little card in the side, or you could get one that, you know, that's if you have the PC slot in the side of your laptop, that most of them do, at least most of the ones that wouldn't have wireless built in. The other option is getting a USB connected device, and that depends on how many ports you've got available to you, whether you want to tie one up with a USB device. The nice part about the card is it's relatively slim, and sometimes you can just leave it plugged into the computer all the time, other than maybe if you're throwing it in your case, you want to take it out. But that would be probably the most inexpensive way.
And again, just by adding that card doesn't give you wireless through your house or business or wherever you might be using it.
Well, yeah, it assumes you've got, you know, something wireless to connect to. So at a coffee shop that already has wireless, or if you, you know, put a wireless within your house, then you would need that card to connect wirelessly to that. But yeah, if you have a high-speed internet connection at home and you want it to be wireless, you're going to have the wireless access point or router to actually communicate with the new card that you put in your laptop.
And that's one of the things I think that confuses a lot of people is that they think, you know, they buy a computer or laptop, let's say, and it has a wireless card, and then they just assume that it will actually be able to just go on the internet wirelessly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's part of the puzzle. You also have to have, and I was explaining this to some people again the other day, and in order to have wireless at your house or business, wherever you're going to use it, you have to have a high-speed internet connection through AT&T, Comcast, Charter, whoever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to add that little wireless router, which actually sends the signal throughout your home or business and gives you that access. And then the laptop would have to have wireless. Also, another popular way is the cell phone companies now with these little wireless that cards that actually use the cell phone networks.
Yep. And that's, you know, that's not a bad way to go if you don't want to be bound to your house. If you're going to be traveling a lot, if you want availability while you're in the car, or if you say you spend vacation somewhere else. Anywhere that you have a cell phone signal that is capable of transmitting that data, you can get on. And it's really
a little
pretty
more
convenient.
Expensive.
It is a little more expensive, not only up front, the cards cost more.
Because with DSL, typically you're looking at $15 to $30 a month for your service.
Yep.
With cable, you know, you're looking at $20 to $40 a month. And with those little wireless cards, $50, $60
probably
a month?
Probably starting at least $50 a month to get an unlimited connection. So... Yeah, it does. It is a little more pricey, and if you're not going to be traveling all over with it, it's not, you know, I would probably go the other route. It's really the convenience, because speed-wise, you know, still getting a decently fast DSL or cable connection is going to be significantly faster than what you get over at one of those air cards that they're called. So,
Kev, we've got I've got an article here. 5 PC power myths that are being debunked.
Okay, hit me.
We talk a lot about power settings on a computer, making sure that you know, that you've got them set optimally so that the computer doesn't use any more power than it has to.
Sure.
Myth number one, the power used turning my PC on negates any benefit of turning it off.
Oh, that's out there.
Yeah, a lot of people think,
before.
Hey, you know what? It uses a lot of power to turn it on, so I'm just going to leave it on all the time.
Yep.
The person who did this here says, the average desktop draws 89 watts per hour. If it's left on overnight for 16 hours, it consumes 1.42 kilowatts. It's impossible for the power surge that occurs when powering a PC on to rival that figure. Makes sense.
That's true. I've actually watched it. We've got one of those little wattage meters that you can actually watch how much electricity is being used while the device is on. And when you start up your computer, it's pretty much running at, you know, full capacity. And so you can see that it's drawing a certain wattage. And then when it slows down and everything kind of calms down a little bit, it drops to probably a third.
Yep.
About a third to a quarter, and that's if it's not doing anything at all. Well, again, you open up an application, start using it, that goes up again. It's certainly not enough to
so in other
that
words,
claim.
If you don't use your computer, you can feel just fine turning it off. Now, you know, if you're going to use it a lot during the day, it might be easier to put it into standby or into hibernate.
Yep.
So it comes back faster, because when you turn your computer on when it's completely off, it could take a few minutes.
Yeah, and that depends on, one, the age of the computer. And, well, you know, something we've been commenting on is, you know, with Vista, they've kind of designed it to not be turned off and back on as often as previous operating systems, really wanting to take advantage of the sleep, especially the sleep and sometimes the hibernation features. Whereas, you know, when you initially start your system up, it sometimes seems to take quite a while to get things up and running. And there's a lot of indexing that goes on, so it, you know, can use the instant search functionality and a lot of services that preload so that when you ask for them, they come up quicker. But it just means that boot time does take a little bit longer.
Yep. So myth number two here, my screensaver is saving me energy. Though at times entertaining and whimsical, screensavers are not power savers. As a report notes, certain graphics-intensive screensavers can cause the computer to burn twice as much energy. According to the EPA's Energy Star program, a screensaver displaying moving images consumes just as much electricity as an active PC. A blank screensaver is slightly better, but most screensavers don't save energy unless they actually turn the screen off, or in the case of laptops, turn off the backlight. So in other words, it's better to place a computer in a low-power state than it is to run a screensaver.
Hmm.
And we've got three more myths that we'll take in just a second here, but first of all, let's take this phone call here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
I had a question. If my hard drive is messed up on my computer, is there any way to get my data out of there? I just, you know, I had a lot of music on there. I was wondering if I could, you know, is there a possible way to get it out?
Sure, there are a couple of ways. Does the computer still turn on? Does it boot into Windows still?
Yeah, no, it doesn't go to Windows. It turns on, and then it takes you to this black screen where it says, you know, you have to either click on a safe mode or start normally. And when you click on that, it, you know, it pretends like it's going to start, and then it goes back to that screen.
Yep. Well, the good news is that there are definitely ways of getting that data off of there. The bad news is that depending on your technical ability, it can be a little bit tricky. Because a lot of times what people will do is they'll say, oh, computer doesn't boot. Let's just go ahead and pop the Windows disk in there and get everything reinstalled. And the next thing you know, all the data's gone.
Okay, well, I haven't done that. You know, do you recommend anywhere that I could take it to? Because I took it to one guy, but he told me that I just needed a whole new hard drive, and there was no way to get my data out.
Well, if you'd like, we do. We actually have got a business on the south side of Holland. It's if you want to have it evaluated, it's you're welcome to bring it by. We're on McAtowell Technologies at 399 East 32nd. We'd be happy to take a look, see if the because some drives are failing, and we can still get drive or information off. Sounds like since it's at least going to the screen where it says safe mode, sounds like there's good hope that your data could be get taken off of there.
All right. Thank you very much. Are you guys open tomorrow?
Yep.
Okay,
Monday through Friday, 8 to 5.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, have a good day.
Bye-bye.
And definitely want to avoid the reinstalling Windows before you get that stuff backed up, because, man, that can be...
I got another comment on that, but we got to take this call first.
All right, let's go ahead and take this one here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
Good afternoon. Just a outline answer to a question about a laptop that's been running real slow. We do the AVG, we do the all the different updates and so forth. What are the five basic things you'd look for to speed it up?
Well, the first thing that we always recommend is one of the easier things. In the lower right-hand corner by your clock there, do you notice that you've got a lot of icons, a lot of programs running down there?
Could be. My wife uses the laptop more than I do.
Okay. The first thing to check really is a lot of times over time you install programs and they start up every time the computer turns on. Mm-hmm. And that can definitely slow the computer down, because the more programs it has to run, the slower it'll be. So that's usually the first thing that we recommend. The next thing, boy, what would the second thing be? Probably to make sure your computer has enough RAM.
Yeah, which is the memory used when your computer's actually running, not the storage memory.
Right.
But finding out how much you have and potentially putting more of that in.
Uh-huh.
You've gone through AVG. Any other spyware or adware utilities that you use?
We use adware.
Okay, that's a good one. Another one to think about is Spy Sweeper. That's a paid program, but it does a really good job of getting rid of adware and other malware like that. It does a nice job with that.
Okay.
Have you ever reinstalled your operating system? I mean, I don't know how old your computer is. Couple of years?
It's a couple of years, but I don't know if that's been done.
Okay. You know, and that's something that happens over time. It's, you know, generically called operating system decay, where things just don't run as well as they used to. And there is no magic bullet fix for it. And, you know, all the things that we've suggested will help with that. But there comes a point where to get that speed back, you basically have to back up your data, reinstall Windows, put your programs back in place, and then put your data back in place. And what you'll see is your system will run like new or better after doing that.
Right.
And that, you know, if the system's 3 or so years old and you just, you know, you've tried everything else, that's probably the next best step. And the thing that you want to make sure with that is, one, that you get all your data backed up. And that's something, you know, that we do before we ever make that recommendation for something.
Yeah.
So, those are a couple options for you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Yep. Bye.
Definitely a common complaint, Kev. Unfortunately, there's no just real easy one. Just do this and it'll make it faster.
Yeah. And, you know, everything will advertise itself as such. Oh, this registry cleaner or this or that. Speed up your computer. Maybe a little bit. But it's not going to be that noticeable. The one exception to that is if you have a significant virus, spyware, adware infection. That'll slow down even the fastest computers. That's eating up all your system resources. And you get rid of that. Bam, things start magically running quickly again. We've also seen it before where there's some mysterious process, often it's an HP-related service for one of their multifunction printers, that eats up half of your computer's capacity anytime it's on. So then you go through and you kind of knock that one out of there, and bam, all of a sudden your computer's faster again. So a lot of different possibilities.
The last thing I would say, and this is sort of not really something that you could do with a computer you already own, but even before you purchase a computer, is that make sure that you buy a computer that's not... For most people, I would say the entry-level computer is just not going to get the job done. I mean, if you just need to go online, but
yep,
to get a computer that's maybe a little bit faster, has a little bit better hardware off the bat, because a lot of the computers that we see that are slow, it's just because they just don't have the power.
Yeah, and, you know, it's great as they built it and shipped it from the factory. It was okay. You turn it on that first time, it's not bad, but then you installed some antivirus software, and then you added some other program, and all of a sudden... The system's just really slow. So, yeah, again, I think that's good advice, is to get just a little bit better than that basic computer. So you're happier in the overall ownership of the computer.
And your comment for the call before that, Kev, regarding somebody
about?
Who has a failing hard drive or the computer doesn't boot,
okay,
crashed
so
hard drive.
This happens all the time where somebody's computer is under warranty and they contact the manufacturer and the manufacturer says, okay, we'll send it in. Or if the policy is that they come out and replace the hard drive, the manufacturer does not care about your data. They're not going to back
anything. Not like you do anyway.
No, and they're not going to back anything up. If you send it to them, you'll get it back without your data on it. If they come to replace that drive, they don't transfer your data. So if you care about your data, even if your computer's under warranty, it's not a bad idea to bring it in and have it evaluated to see if, yes, that data is recoverable. Because the more media you have of pictures and, you know, massive music collections, that's, you know, stuff that can't necessarily be recreated. So, again, even if it is under warranty, remember that warranty generally does not cover your data.
Okay, Kev, back to the five PC power myths debunked. And if you're out there listening and you do have questions for the computer guys here, give us a call, 395-1450. Be happy to help you out. So myth number three, turning my PC on and off will reduce its performance and useful life. There may have been some truth to this once upon a time, but today's new and improved modern hardware can handle it. The findings cite that modern computers are designed to handle 40,000 on-off cycles before failure, and you're not likely to approach that number during the average computer's 5 to 7 year lifespan.
And 5 to 7 is generous. Most people do not keep their computers for 5 to 7 years.
3 to 5, I would say, is a little bit more realistic.
Yep. And that's not because they're broken. It's just because what's new is so much faster and better generally than what they have. And it's, you know, makes sense to replace it.
Yep. Because the average life, in our experience anyway, of a hard drive is 3 to 5 years.
Exceptions. There's always exceptions to the rule on the long and the short end. So that is not a guarantee.
We've seen some people bring in computers 10, 12 years old, still original hard drive. That's amazing.
Yep. Seen some at 13 months.
Or less.
So, yeah. Or 6 months.
Yeah. So, turning off your computer on and off will reduce its useful life. Not a problem. Feel free to turn it on and off as needed.
But again, that's one of those, depending on how long it takes to come up, whether it's really worth doing that. And that's where the power-saving features of standby are kind of nice.
Myth number four, I cannot run updates and patches for a computer in a low power state. It is perfectly possible to rouse computers from slumber for patches, updates, and backups. For instance, if you are worried about, my backup may not run.
Sure.
Because I've got it set for overnight. It gets a little bit more complicated, and that probably wouldn't apply mostly to home customers, because you are able to use the Wacom LAN technology. That's more aimed for a business type of a application.
Sure. And again, there's no guarantee with that. That's going to depend on how things are configured.
Yep. And then myth number five, my PC users will not tolerate any downtime for power management. The report does acknowledge that end users have very little patience for downtime. However, it suggests that potential user complaints can be mitigated by communicating the positive financial and environmental benefits of PC power management. Or you tell them, hey, take the 4 or 5 minutes that it takes to turn the computer on, grab a cup of coffee, get some water, chat with your neighbor.
Yeah. And it's generally, you know, pretty good rule. Shut it off at the end of the day, turn it on first thing in the morning, leave it on all day. That's, you know, that's not a bad way to go. But, you know, one thing is they're using a lot less power than they used to. And even in that span now, if standby or sleep or whatever you want to call it is enabled, it will go to sleep on and off during that period of time. Now, sometimes that doesn't go as well as it should, and that usually has to do with some device driver, whether it's a printer or a graphics card or something that does not respond well to either the going in or coming out. And that would be something that needs to be troubleshooted. So,
well, Kev, this is a story out of Australia.
Okay.
A Canberra lawyer has been permitted to serve legal documents via Facebook for a couple who defaulted on a loan.
Really?
Yep. He claims he needed to do this because he was unable to track them down to a physical address. Kind of interesting, huh?
Wow.
And legal papers have been served through Facebook.
And it stood. That was...
And an Australian court has permitted that to happen. Now, obviously, that's not the United States.
That's an interesting development. Wow. So you better watch out. You better stay if you
want to. Well, you know, the reality is if you're trying to hide from your bills on a loan that they couldn't repay, but they've got their Facebook site up.
Well, they'll get you.
Now they can get them in Australia.
That's right.
Not something you have to worry about necessarily.
Coming soon to a household near you. And they'll find you. This is interesting. More than 1/6 of households have only cell phones. The number's grown to 18%, led by adults living with unrelated roommates, renters, and young people, according to federal figures released Wednesday. Additional 13% of households have landlines, but get nearly all of their calls on their cell phones. Survey showed, taken together, that means about 3 in 10 households are essentially reachable only on their cell phones.
And a lot of those people who do have cell phones are actually using those cell phones more like computers now than phones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you see the ads now. I mean, it seems like the phone can do half the stuff your computer can.
Yeah, and if it's, you know, the Apple iPhone ad, it all happens in a second, right?
I was talking with some people last night because...
Some iPhone owners?
There were okay, like six good. Of them together.
Giving them a little heck?
Yeah, just give them a little... And, they, you know, on the one hand, they agree. But on the other hand, they all like it so much that they don't even care.
There you go. See, that's what it comes down to. It's so great that it doesn't even matter if they lie to you.
That's right.
So anyway, that music means it's the end of another show. Thanks for tuning in today. If we weren't able to take your call, give us a call during the week. 394-4940 is our number. We are from Macatawa Technologies. We're located on the south side of Holland, 399 East 32nd Street. That's one block west of the corner of 32nd and 31. Also, check out the podcast. Easiest way to do that, Apple iTunes. If you've got it, type WHTC into the music store, and we will pop up, and you can listen to us while you're snow blowing.
There you go.
That's the one.
And have a Merry Christmas.
That's right.
We'll be back in a couple weeks. Have a good one.